Welcome to Shouts from the Back Row, the official podcast of the-back-row.com. My name is Gil, and I'm your host. And with me, as always, are my co-hosts Robin.
Hello.
And TK.
Hello.
On our last show, we wrapped up 2012 with our thoughts on the best and worst movies of that year. On this episode, we'll be looking forward at the year to come as we discuss our top three most anticipated films of 2013. We'll also be making a few predictions as to which movie will be the worst of the year, based on what we've seen or heard. And since we're recording this on the day that the Oscar nominees were announced, we'll also be attempting to predict the Best Picture winner. All this and more coming right up after these messages. The Back Row has a PayPal account, and we're accepting donations. If you feel like throwing some of your hard-earned dollars our way, you can do so at The Back Row. Just go to the-back-row.com and click the donate button in the right column. If you donate, you can choose a movie for us to review and even specify which of us gets to review it. Doesn't that sound like fun? So drop us a line. Let us know what movies you're looking forward to in 2013. Shouts from the Back Row is available through iTunes. If you search the iTunes store for the Back Row podcasts, you can subscribe to our feed, which will not only get you your weekly dose of media culture from us, but also Tom Lando's all-original audiobook podcast series Oathbreakers, and back episodes of our heavy metal podcast, Drop D Revolution, and our Surreality podcast, The Tom Lando Files. Tell your friends and subscribe today. We like to open the show with a discussion of what we've been up to. This is a place for us to talk about movies we've been watching, TV shows we've been following, games we've been playing, and just about everything else we've been doing. So, TK, why don't you start us off? What have you been up to?
Again, I've had a really busy last couple weeks, so I haven't had a chance to really do very much. I'm about halfway through season 3 of DS9, and it is getting better. There were a couple episodes in season 2 I was a little worried about, but DS9 appears to have gotten out of its slump. Other than that, the game that I mentioned last week, Crusader Kings 2, is still occupying a great deal of my time. And Gil and I have been talking about it fairly often recently, because the game's kind of a blast, so... I've been enjoying the crap out of it. If you're interested in like long-term strategy games, I'd highly recommend it.
Here's sort of how I'd recommend that is I'd say if you like strategy computer games and TV shows like Game of Thrones or like The Tudors or The Borgias or like any of those sort of medieval period dramas, you should definitely play Crusader Kings because that's all it is. It's like a medieval soap opera in a game.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, so I'd highly recommend it if you want to pick it up. And literally, guys, that's all I've been up to this week. How about you?
Robin, what have you been up to?
Well, I saw the movie Jack Reacher, which is not a film I had very high expectations for. I knew I was probably going to like it, but I found it kind of curious that it was being released in late December when it's usually like Oscar bait time. And this pretty much seemed like nothing more than like fun popcorn entertainment. But I did enjoy it overall. It's funny, I'd completely forgotten until I saw it that it was being directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who wrote The Usual Suspects and also wrote and directed The Way of the Gun. So that kind of made me more curious to see it. And this isn't a film, it doesn't break any new ground whatsoever, and because it's based on like a series of novels, it kind of feels like an elongated episode of a TV show, but it is still pretty entertaining, and I liked Tom Cruise in this. Even though the character is like pretty much a walking cliche, he was still pretty entertaining in it, and a lot of fun, and had some really good fight scenes, and they also had like some great chase scene in it as well, which was done practically instead of CGI, so I thought that was a refreshing change. The big highlight to me, though, was probably the casting of Werner Herzog as the villain. Like, that's gotta be one of the most offbeat casting choices of all time, and it's kind of a shame that he didn't get that much screen time, because he was definitely the most fascinating part of the movie, playing a character called the Zek, which is pretty much a Siberian term for prison, and he's got this major chip on his shoulder about having spent all this time in a Siberian prison, which has pretty much made him insane. I think the best scene in the film was where he was showing his hand where he had to chew off his own fingers to avoid frostbite while he was in that prison, and he tries to get a henchman to test his loyalty by biting off his own fingers or else he will kill him. Like, that scene was just so warped. It felt like completely different than the rest of the movie, but it was almost worth the price of admission alone. Not really much else I can say about it. I did have a good time watching it. I thought that the trailer kind of misrepresented it, though, because I was kind of as figuring this to be more of a vigilante revenge movie rather than a standard murder mystery, because I was shocked while I was watching the film to see that the main scene they show in the trailer with the guy in the hospital bed is the very last scene in the movie. It makes it sound like he's waiting for Jack Reacher to come kill him, but then you kind of find out that Jack Reacher is there to protect him, and it's kind of weird when the film ends with this scene in the trailer. So it was kind of misleading there, but it's kind of a minor complaint, so I would recommend it overall, even though I wouldn't rank this anywhere near one of the best films of the year. I know you saw it, Gil, so I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, frankly, my thoughts are basically just echoes of yours. Didn't break any new ground. Christopher McQuarrie he's pretty good with dialogue, I find.
Yeah.
And Jack Reacher has some decent dialogue in it, certainly. Some decent action as well. And the highlight is definitely Werner Herzog, who didn't get enough screen time, in my opinion. And that's about that. It's like not a movie to really write home about, but certainly enjoyable, sort of fun afternoon movie, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I know that they've written something like 15 novels with this character, but I don't see this being a big enough success that they're going to make any more of these movies. So I don't see this becoming a franchise. But for what it is, it's definitely okay.
I listened to an episode of the podcast, the Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith, where he interviews Christopher McQuarrie about Jack Reacher, and I found that podcast a lot more interesting than the movie itself.
Oh, interesting. Cool. And another movie that I saw, this is an oldie, because Django Unchained was just released in the past month, I was in the mood to watch some old, like, Franco Nero Django movies, so I suddenly got in the mood to watch another kind of infamous Franco Nero movie, and that's Enter the Ninja, which was released in the early 80s and was, like, a huge, surprisingly huge success. It was released by the Cannon Group, and because of this, there was a huge spate of ninja movies released in the 1980s, and pretty much all of them are terrible, but they are kind of fun to watch in their own demented way. Enter the Ninja is just kind of funny because Franco Nero is just the weirdest casting choice ever to, like, be playing a ninja, because he apparently had, like, no martial arts training whatsoever, so pretty much all the scenes of his ninja stuff are pretty much stunt doubles inside a mask. So it's kind of like, it made me wonder why they cast him. And during his dialogue scenes, his voice is totally dubbed over with this really terrible American-sounding voice, so, yeah, it's just very bizarre. Like I said, ninja movies are pretty dumb, and this one is too. It is kind of fun to see, like, Shokasuji make his kind of star-making appearance there, because he plays the villain in this, and he became, like, the icon of ninja movies in, like, the 1980s. He made, like, dozens of them, and they're pretty much all the same, but he's always a lot of fun to watch. The highlight of this film is this scene that's pretty much become, like, an internet meme where Franco Nero kills the main villain by throwing a ninja star into his chest, and then he gives this, like, aw shucks look while putting up his hands before he falls over and dies. It's just priceless. I like watching old canon films from the 80s because they're usually so bad, and this one is no exception. It isn't like a lot of those Japanese imports or Chinese imports where, like, the Godfrey Ho ones, where they're just so over the top and bizarre they become entertaining. This one is just kind of in the middle, but if you're curious to see how the whole ninja craze got started, then it's definitely a curiosity to watch. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gil, but don't you own a copy of this movie?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Who doesn't love Enter the Ninja? I mean, it's like you said, this particular brand of martial arts movie, they're pretty dumb. You know, the martial arts are always just a little bit slower than they need to be in order to be impressive. And if anything, watch Enter the Ninja for that ridiculous famous death scene.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised it took me this long to watch it, but I was just in the mood to see some Franco Nero, but unfortunately it was mostly Franco Nero in a mask, so it didn't really qualify. And as far as what else I've been up to, I got into season 3 of Breaking Bad. I started watching it last month, and it's really even getting better as it goes along. It was great to start with, but it's really entering some really interesting territory now, so I'm anxious to see where it goes. And I've finally started getting into The Wire again. I watched about 2 episodes last year and then got kind of sidetracked, but I've made it a vow to at least get through season 1, so I've watched a couple more episodes. And it does move at a very deliberate pace, but it's really setting up a really interesting world, and it's, from what I've heard, this is one of the very few TV shows that has never jumped the shark in its entire tenure, so I'm anxious to stay with it and see where it goes.
I've actually been doing a lot of the same things. Speaking of The Wire, I've been catching up with it. I just finished season 2 over the holidays.
Hey!
Season 2 was a lot of fun, where they're at the docks. I don't know, a lot of people say it's a really slow season. I guess, kind of. There isn't any extremely high drama, except for, and I won't spoil it for you, Robin, but there's a prominent character throughout season 1 is killed in season 2. And it's quite dramatic, and that surprised me, certainly. But yeah, it's a great show. I hear season 3 is one of the best, if not the best season. That seems to be the word online, so I look forward to watching it. And I saw Django Unchained for a second time. And I wanted to talk about a few things that we didn't have a chance to talk about on our end of the year podcast. First off, on a second viewing, there are a few things I noticed that I absolutely loved. I mean, I absolutely love the whole film, but in particular, I thought these are the little details that you miss on a first viewing. Then on a second viewing, like, they help you appreciate the film even more. The way Christoph Waltz strokes his mustache when he's sort of nervous in a few situations. I really like that. I also really like how the sound design for this film, sometimes it gets like, it goes to cartoon levels of ridiculousness. The sounds, where the sounds do not match what's going on at all. Particularly during some of those big shootouts in the final act, the bullets in slow motion, Tarantino makes them sound like bombs, like, and then, and you see somebody get hit and blood like splatter everywhere. Also at one point, one of James Remar's characters, he turns around and you hear like the snarl of a tiger. Or when Christoph Waltz's sleeve gun pops out, you hear it pop out with this like almost science fiction-y sort of sound. I totally love the sound design of this movie. It's probably the wackiest that Tarantino has ever done, but it's just so energetic and so much fun. The action scenes are even better, I think, on a second viewing. They're, again, just full of that hyperactive Tarantino spirit. And I wanted to ask you guys about the final act. I'll say spoilers for Django Unchained's ending, but I've heard a lot of polarized opinions from critics online about how this movie's third act goes, where at the end of the second act, both Dr. King and Calvin Candy are killed. And then the third act is Django going back to the plantation again to sort of have a face-off with the guy who I guess is revealed to be the main villain, Steven, played by Samuel L. Jackson. Some people think that this makes the film feel really unbalanced and uneven. Some people, I guess, enjoy it. I've just heard like a wide variety of opinions on this, and I wanted to get your thoughts. What did you think about that unevenness? Because I know I certainly did not expect the movie to go that way.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, I think that maybe the whole unbalanced and unevenness was intentional, because they are like kind of satirizing old B westerns, and a lot of them really did tend to do that. Of course, I was completely shocked at first. I mean, I knew that they would probably kill off Christoph Waltz before the second act was done, but I didn't expect that they would kill off DiCaprio so quickly, and that kind of shocked me, because I really wanted to see him get a bigger comeuppance and death scene. I was actually kind of hoping, since they established the whole thing with the hot box where Django's wife is locked in there, that maybe they would leave Steven or Calvin Candy in there and then just ride off while he died a slow, suffocating death. I kind of would have preferred that, but I think Samuel L. Jackson was such an effective villain that I thought it was pretty cool to make him the main villain at the end, because it's not a kind of a trope of these westerns where like the black slave character is so hateful and then automatically becomes the main villain. So I thought that was a neat way to kind of play with conventions.
That's another really interesting thing. A second viewing allows you to see the foreshadowing. You know, on a first viewing, you don't really know what's foreshadowing what. And it was really interesting about to see what was foreshadowed early in the film. And I guess it turns out that the main sort of foreshadowed plot device is that sleeve gun more than anything else. TK, what did you think of the final act of Django Unchained?
I felt it a little disjointed, to be honest, because after, like, I really felt that Django didn't bring a whole lot to the film until the third act, where he's pushed into the limelight because Waltz has been shot. And I don't know, there's something about the last act that kind of, because I really liked Calvin Candy. I thought he was an excellent villain. It was nice to have him there. And, like, I appreciate the switch to Samuel L. to show, like, how complacency was kind of not the big problem, but certainly a large one in terms of the times. But it's, I don't know, something about it felt very odd to me. And I noticed, I was looking at a couple of, when I was going over the movie again in my head, I felt the editing was still poor. And again, it's because Sally wasn't there and it's her assistant who was doing the editing. But I felt like especially the last part during the battle sequences, I found a lot of the cuts really choppy. But that's just me. It didn't feel like the last scene was band-aided on, but it felt kind of like a whole different film to me.
And thank you, gentlemen, for illustrating my point exactly. Very different views that people have on this final act. My personal opinion is I really like it. I think it was definitely intentional, and I think it was intentional for the reasons that I also said I liked Django Unchained in our end of the year episode. I said, this is just a movie where it's Tarantino just doing whatever the hell he wants. He's just going to tell this story in whatever way he likes. And he doesn't care if you're on board or not. Like, he's just going to do it. And I think that's why he told the story that way. He was just like, well, what the hell? Why can't I kill off these two major characters and have the final act be something totally different? But that's not the only reason I enjoy it. I also enjoy it because from a film theory perspective, this is also something that I talked about in our previous episode, the film trope of the magical Negro, the exceptional Negro, the black character who is just there to dispense wisdom or act in a sort of, you know, wise, mentorly way. And for examples of this, you can see, watch like The Blind Side. The Blind Side is sort of a prime example of this film trope. Tarantino is very aware of this film trope. He even has Calvin Candy say the phrase exceptional Negro in the film, just drawing total attention to what he's doing. And I don't know if he meant to do this, but I really like the fact that for the final act, our black protagonist's white mentor character is killed off. So like you said, TK, now Django has total agency. And he's given the freedom to do whatever he wants, and he does everything his way, including that great little scene with the slavers. Rewatching that scene, even though Tarantino is doing the absolute worst Australian accent, this is something that does not get better on repeat viewings. Even though Tarantino is doing that atrocious accent, that scene is just so great. Really well paced. I love the way Django is behaving, the way he cons all the slavers, and the way he executes them as well. It's all very, very satisfying. So I am pro Django Unchained in this case. I don't know, but hey, again, we'll be doing our full Oscar podcast near the Oscars, of course. But I know, guys, do you think Christoph Waltz, like, prime candidate for Best Supporting Actor again?
I'd like to see him win, but I don't think he will, just because the Academy doesn't like to repeat itself by giving him another Oscar for another Tarantino role. But I really want to see him arrive at the red carpet in the wagon with the giant wobbly tooth on top.
That would be incredible.
Yes.
aside from that, I've been catching up on the films I still needed to see from last year. I saw Zero Dark Thirty, the Catherine Bigelow film that is another candidate for Best Motion Picture of the Year. And this one is, of course, about the decade-long hunt for Osama bin Laden following the events of 9/11. And I've got to say, guys, this is a really solid film. It's a very, very well-made film. Catherine Bigelow brings her trademark style of character drama and subtle performances. She really gets these great, nuanced performances out of her cast. It's really enjoyable. It's a very different kind of drama from most. And I think comparing it to The Hurt Locker is probably apt, because it's that kind of, that particular brand of interpersonal character drama that Catherine Bigelow always brings. Jessica Chastain is really great in this. The raid on the compound where Osama bin Laden was hiding is totally exciting. It's the last act of the movie. And it's really tense, and it's totally thrilling. Probably some of the best action Catherine Bigelow's ever done. And overall I like the film, but much like The Hurt Locker, like, I'm never wild about these movies. I just have this real respect for the craft that I can see at work here. You know, Catherine Bigelow's obviously got a really deft hand at direction, and she knows how to pace things, and she knows how to make what could be extremely dry subject matter really intriguing and interesting, and it does suck you right in. So I do recommend Zero Dark Thirty, and have either of you guys had a chance to see it yet? Or, I mean, I guess we're, of course, going to be talking about it in the coming months as well.
Yeah, unfortunately I haven't, but I definitely will the moment I get an opportunity.
Well, yeah, same.
Yep, a terrific film. And, finally, I've been reading a whole bunch of comics. I'm in the final quarter of the Marvel Civil War run, in which all these, you know, basically all the characters, the superheroes in the Marvel Universe are all pulled together because of the Superhero Registration Act, which divides basically all these Marvel characters into the two camps, the Rebels and the pro-registration ones. And it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's sort of like, it's what I love about the Avengers. You know, the Avengers, certainly the Avengers the movie, it's taking all these heroes that we've seen and we've gotten to know and we've gotten to love and putting them all together on screen. It's sort of like the best of the best in one giant crossover. Well, as you can imagine, Marvel Civil War is, it's just everything in one giant crossover. So many different characters get their time to shine. Some die, some don't. Who's going to be on whose team? The main conflict is between Captain America and Iron Man, which, of course, I mean, that's just an awesome conflict to see going on as well. And I can't wait to see how it wraps up. I've been told that the events of Marvel Civil War are still affecting Marvel Comics continuity today, which is pretty cool. So I'm hoping something huge and cataclysmic is about to dawn. And I think that's certainly the case, because Red Skull just teamed up with Doctor Doom, and that's never a good thing. Aside from that, I've also been rereading the Walking Dead comics. And I know we're in the Walking Dead off season, and I don't want to go on yet another one of my trademark Walking Dead rants. But there were things that I noticed about the comics. It had been a while since I had read all the comics all the way through. I certainly hadn't read them all the way through since the show started. And rereading them, I was just amazed at how bloated the show feels compared to the comics. And I'll give you some perspective. The events of both Season 1 and Season 2 of The Walking Dead take place, I'd say about 90% of them take place within the first six issues of the comic. By the 12th issue, they're already at the prison. So the comics just rip along at this extremely fast pace, and everything is heightened. And it just amazed me rereading them how slow and plotting The Walking Dead. It feels like the show is just stumbling along like the zombies, especially compared to the comics. But the art is also terrific. I'd forgotten just how awesome some of the art is. It's all done in grayscale, like black and white and shades of gray, which gives it this very, very bleak feeling, and just absolutely terrific art. by, I believe it's Charlie Adder, Tony Moore, those guys. Really terrific. And Robert Kirkman's writing is awesome. It's awesome. I'm shocked that he hasn't written more of the series, because I really respect how in the comics, all the characters are just done lying to each other. Now that the world has ended, they got nothing to hide. So when Lori is pregnant, there's no mincing around or anything. She just goes right direct and she goes, I'm pregnant. I know I'm pregnant. I can feel that I'm pregnant. And then Rick goes, well, it could be Shane's, right? And they just talk about it and they come to terms with it in that same scene.
Not 8 episodes of dragging this on.
Exactly. It was a real jolt for me rereading the comics. I was like, not only is this so much better, but it's amazing to me that AMC just wanted to slow everything down at times to a crawl. Quite a shame. But, at least the Walking Dead comics are even still going on. I think they're around issue 100, and I really need to catch up. I've only read about until issue 70. So that's something I'm definitely looking forward to. I'm loving rereading these. The comics really are some of the best zombie fiction. As Simon Pegg himself can attest to, as he did the afterword in volume 2, and it's hilarious to read his thoughts on zombies. He has a really profound little thing where he says, with zombies, you don't have to be Peter Venkman or, you know, anybody special. Zombies are the kind of monster where anybody can fight them. And that's kind of what makes them cool, because anybody can imagine themselves fighting zombies as well. So again, I highly recommend reading the Walking Dead comics if you haven't already. So much fun. It's just such a great series. So now let's talk about our most anticipated films of 2013. Before we dive right into our lists, guys, is there anything besides the films we're going to talk about that you're really looking forward to in 2013?
Not particularly, no. I'm still debating if I want to go see Top Gun in 3D.
Yeah, you know, Jurassic Park in 3D. I'm wondering if I'll go see that one.
Attack of the Clones? No.
No. Oh, is that coming out this year?
I think in late November, December or something.
They're still trying that shit? Oh, well. Yeah. It'll probably pay off when they get to A New Hope.
It's true.
I'm looking forward to a bunch of TV. Californication starts back up again, I think, in 3 days. Breaking Bad's going to finish this year.
Yep.
You know, as I usually do, Boardwalk Empire starts in September. Mark your calendars. And Mad Men. Hey.
I believe it's
a nice little bee to get Mad Men back.
I believe it's their penultimate season, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well. All those shows. And, you know, to a degree, The Walking Dead. At least season 3 of The Walking Dead is picking up the pace. But mostly I'm looking forward to just a whole pile of movies. So let's get right into it. TK, what is your number 3 most anticipated film of 2013?
It was a movie that was bumped from last year, and I was super excited to see it last year, and I just have to wait. I think I actually only have to wait a week to see this one, which I'm super excited about, and that's Gangster Squad. Because it's Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone and Nick Nolte, and it's Nick Nolte and Josh Brolin and Sean Penn playing gangsters. It's going to be awesome. Like, I don't know what else I can say about this movie. It looks really good. I'm again, this one was pulled because of the gentleman that shot up the theater when Batman was playing. There was a scene where guys shoot up a theater, so they took that out, which I'm kind of disappointed in, but I'm still super excited to see this film, because Gosling's on fire these days, and I'm not going to miss pretty much anything he has going on this year, and it's set in my perfect time period, and I'm looking forward to seeing Sean Penn play a boxer / gang lord. It's going to be really neat. I'm really looking forward to it. And, of course, the Outside the Law thing. You know what it looks like? It looks like a more violent Rat Pack sort of thing from what I get from the promos, but it looks badass.
It certainly does have an all-star cast. Yeah, it's coming out tomorrow. It's coming out tomorrow, actually, yes. January 11th. And this won't be, this is sort of like in my, I guess you could say my honorable mentions. I'm interested in it because it's directed by Ruben Fleischer, who also directed Zombieland. I totally love Zombieland. At the same time, Ruben Fleischer directed 30 Minutes or Less, which I hear was absolutely terrible to the point where I didn't watch it. So he's sort of like got a 50-50 shot, I guess you could say, with this one. And it seems like really bad luck that this happened to coincide with that theater shooting, because I think it probably really hurt its marketing campaign, Gangster Squad's marketing campaign. I've read a few early reviews of Gangster Squad, and from what I've heard, it's sort of cliche. It doesn't break any new ground, but it's like really flashy and sort of fun. And I guess if you look at Zombieland, certainly, you can tell that Ruben Fleischer has this really sort of flashy, wacky direction style. And I guess that could be a lot of fun. But I don't know if I'm going to go into it looking for anything deep or meaningful. Robin, are you looking forward to Gangster Squad?
Yes, it was on my honorable mentions list for 2012, but of course it got bumped up a year. I was looking forward to it for the exact same reasons, because I was anxious to see Ruben Fleischer tackle this material with pretty much a terrific A-list cast. Unfortunately, I think right now its rating on Rotten Tomatoes is only at 35%, and I think a lot of the people are complaining about is that the production details are amazing, but the writing is really lackluster, and they're kind of complaining that it wants to be like The Untouchables, but the Untouchables movie had David Mamet writing it, and here apparently the characters are kind of underdeveloped and one-dimensional, so that's kind of disappointing to hear, but I do definitely want to see it, and I'm a big fan of like these old-school gangster flicks, and I like to see Mickey Cohen, the character, on screen, because I know they used him kind of briefly in L.A. Confidential, and that's kind of what this movie reminds me of, so I'll definitely check it out at some point.
Robin, what's your number three most anticipated film of 2013?
My number three is going to be Iron Man 3. And under normal circumstances, I'm not sure this one would make the list, because I'm wondering how this trend is going to continue, if people are going to get burned out with superhero movies and comic book movies after The Avengers, because after what a huge epic movie the Avengers movie was, it might seem kind of anticlimactic to see a lot of these characters starring in their own individual movies on a much smaller scale. But there are two words that are making me look forward to this movie: Shane Black. I'm anxiously awaiting Iron Man 3 because it is co-written and directed by Shane Black, who I've said many times on these programs is one of my favorite writers out there. He's written some of my favorite action films like Lethal Weapon, Last Boy Scout, and The Long Kiss Goodnight, and this is going to be his first film since Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and that's one of the main reasons I'm looking forward to it, is because he's reuniting with Robert Downey Jr., and it's kind of a nice story here that went full circle, because Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was one of Robert Downey Jr.'s comeback films after his big substance abuse problems, and kind of showed the world that he could still act. And here we are 8 years later, and look where he is. He's played like one of the biggest like superheroes of all time and become an A-list star again. So it's great to see it all come full circle and see him work with Shane Black again. And I'm kind of looking forward to see what kind of snappy dialogue he comes up with for this. I mean, Iron Man 2 was a lot of fun, but it kind of paled in the comparison of the original. And I think this one's going to be a step up. And it's also got a great new supporting cast as well, like Guy Pearce in it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Ben Kingsley as the villain, because usually when Ben Kingsley does these popcorn films, they're usually like pretty bad, but here I think it's gonna work out pretty well. So like I said, under normal circumstances I might be skeptical about Iron Man 3 just because of the whole comic book burnout thing, but because Shane Black is doing it, I'm really looking forward to it.
Part of what I find interesting about the superhero trend in movies lately has been the progression of the genre, to the point where now superhero movies are like prestige pictures, even. If you look at, I mean, Iron Man 1 had Jeff Bridges as the villain. Mickey Rourke was the villain in Iron Man 2, and now Ben Kingsley. Like, these are all A-list actors in these goofy, villainous roles, chewing up the scenery. And with Christopher Nolan doing Batman, and with these, like, sort of nerd god directors like Joss Whedon and James Gunn directing, you know, the Avengers and the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy, it's just sort of become accepted that, like, superheroes, you know, anybody can do anything they want with superheroes, but the industry realizes that giving these properties to these prestige A-list sort of auteur directors can only be a good thing. And I don't know if we'll ever really suffer from comic book movie burnout because of that, because these they keep giving them to the right people, these people who really respect the source material. And this is a prime example of it. It's sort of like, where do you go after the Avengers? Well, let's reunite Shane Black and Robert Downey Jr. to do Iron Man 3, a threequel. This may be one of the best threequels of all time, guys. And I say that just based on the talent involved. No small feat. TK, I know that you are probably totally looking forward to Iron Man 3, right?
I did, but I left off my list because I felt it was too obvious.
Seriously?
It's
even got Guy Pearce in it.
No, I know.
How is this not your number one?
It's not my number one, actually. but this is going to be one that I will, like, run to theaters to see. Like, but I just felt that people who've listened to the podcast were like, oh, well, TK is going to pick Iron Man. Well, now I wanted to throw him off a little. So I really want to see this movie, guys. I just haven't, I just didn't throw it on my list this time.
Oh, pulling the rug out from under us. This is like Tarantino and Django Unchained all over again. out of curiosity, there are some other Marvel films coming out this year. Are any of them on your guys' lists, or can we talk about them now?
No.
So, like, Thor the Dark World. You guys looking forward to that one in any capacity?
Yes. I actually can't wait to see Thor. Like you were just saying, I don't know if I'm going to get tired of the glut of superhero films, because we went through such a long time with, like, such bad ones, and it's nice to see them coming into the limelight and becoming, like, more popular, which is great to see. And I really liked Thor, although it was too short. I hope this one's a little longer. And Iron Man 3 and Thor are just making me more excited for 2014, where we get to see the Winter Soldier, which is the second part of Cap America, which is going to be badass. I'm super pumped to see Thor. Too far, too long, I have to wait too long.
Yeah, and all of it building up to the Avengers 2. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt has been cast in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, it's really quite something to see all of these just total pro actors signing on to what would at some point have been considered absolutely ridiculous movie properties. Robin, are you looking forward to Thor the Dark World? Be honest, it's your number one, isn't it?
No, not really. I wasn't the biggest fan of the original Thor movie. It's kind of my least favorite of all the Marvel, like, superheroes and stuff. Like, I'll see it, but it's not at the top of my list.
It's sort of in my honorable mentions. I'm looking forward to, so is Iron Man 3, I should note. Iron Man 3 isn't in my top three. It's sort of in the stuff I'm looking forward to. Don't get me wrong, I love Shane Black, love Robert Downey Jr., loved their collaboration on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. But I sort of lump all those Marvel movies together because it's all part of this greater movie universe. And so Marvel Phase 2 basically gets a big seal of anticipation from me. Thor the Dark World, Iron Man 3, the next Captain America movie, Avengers 2, Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm really curious to see where this is all headed, because it's so new. Nothing on this scale of franchising has ever been attempted in the history of movies, and gets me really excited. So my number three is, this will come as no surprise, guys. I'm shooting myself in the foot. First, I want to actually, before I even name my number three, I just want to say that I'm really glad I could have filled my top three with just science fiction movies, just genre movies even. All kinds of great genre films are coming out. We're living in this age of genre cinema. A lot of critics looking back on 2012 called it the year of genre cinema because of films like The Cabin in the Woods that completely dissect the genre and become the ultimate sampling of it at the same time. And likewise, something like Django Unchained is another great genre film of 2012. So I'm really glad that we're getting all these new genre films. I love that we're getting all these new sci-fi films. And my number three is a sci-fi film, but I'm shooting myself in the foot here because it's such a goofy one. Pacific Rim. I really want to see Pacific Rim. And I've said many times before how I unabashedly love just giant fighting CGI robots. If they're done really well, man, I just love how they look. I gave the Transformers films passes just based on how much I love the special effects at work in them. And I really can't deliver very good criticism of these movies. Like, I can recognize their flaws, but I just don't care because the little kid in me is just going like, oh, look at those giant fighting robots. Oh boy. Like, go, go, go. And, so Pacific Rim is sort of like my dream movie. We're doing giant fighting robots and we've also got enormous Godzilla monsters and it's all being directed by Guillermo del Toro. You know, talk about like nerd cred directors who you can tell just love a certain genre of movie. Like this is going to be what that stupid Roland Emmerich Godzilla movie was trying to be. You know, they want to bring these giant monsters of pop culture to life, or at least these giant sort of robot and monster fighting movies from Japan. They want to bring them to life and make them sort of look realistic and give them scale and weight and all of that. This, I think, is going to be sort of the prime, the acme of that ascension. We're finally getting the robots versus giant monsters movie that we've always wanted with Guillermo del Toro at the helm. And on top of that, it's got, I can't remember her name, but the voice of GLaDOS from the Portal games is the voice of the AI of the giant fighting robots. Like, Guillermo del Toro clearly knows his target audience with the nerds out there, because talk about a great little throwaway to those awesome games by Valve. Are either of you guys looking forward to Pacific Rim? Probably not as much as me, I bet.
Yeah, gee, how did I know you would pick the film with the giant robots in your top three? That was a really predictable. But normally, like, I've gotten kind of burned out on robot movies and the Transformers movies over the last few years. But I do have hope with this one because it is Guillermo del Toro, who hasn't actually directed a film in nearly like 5 years now. But I trust his judgment on this and that he'll know how to appeal to the audience and know how to appeal to nerds. And we'll probably have some really cool like battles between the robots and the monsters. And it's got quite an interesting cast too, because of course it has Ron Perlman, and he's got Idris Elba from The Wire, and Rinko Kikuchi, who was the girl from Babel, who's one of the biggest stars in Japan, and here she is in a robot versus monster movie. So that it's kind of a weird cast there, but it looks pretty entertaining.
I just think it's going to be so much fun. The trailers for it just look like such goofy fun. I mean, I've talked about the show Symbionic Titan on the podcast. It's this great short-lived cartoon by Genndy Tartakovsky, and it's like a loving homage to those giant robot fighting movies and stuff like Voltron and all that. And watching the trailer for Pacific Rim, I couldn't help but think, like, this is like live-action Symbionic Titan. It really is just, it's pressing all my buttons, guys. It's really totally appealing to me. TK, are you even remotely excited about Pacific Rim?
See, I never, I didn't watch Transformers when I was a kid, so it was just one of those shows that I just never watched. And so the giant robot thing never really sunk into me. So, like, Pacific Rim looks like goofy fun, and I'll watch it for Idris because he's amazing. But
he's canceling the apocalypse.
Yeah, it's true. But it's just not grabbing me as much as it's grabbing you, I'm afraid.
I mean, to be fair, I'll watch anything Guillermo del Toro does or produces or presents. I'm not going to say that he has a perfect track record. Some of the movies he's like produced, like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, kind of lame. And some of his movies, like his film Kronos, was very strange, and I don't know if it really worked for me, but it was still really interesting. And I know that regardless of the film, Guillermo del Toro is going to deliver something really cool and unusual and different and also play to all the nerdy things that I love. So Pacific Rim, guys, I can't wait. I promise from now on, I'm going to be talking about like respectable movies. TK, what's your number two?
My number two is actually a trailer you sent me a while ago, Gil. It was a movie I had no idea about coming out. I had no idea it was coming out. Once I saw a trailer, I realized I have to see this. Like, there's nothing else I can, I can't miss this one. And it's a Ryan Gosling picture who, again, is on fire over the last couple of years. And as I said previously, I don't want to miss anything he's coming out this year. And that's The Place Beyond the Pines, which, looks to me like Drive with motorcycles, as I think you put it, Gil, which, you know what? Is fine by me. This movie looks really interesting, where Gosling plays this stunt motorcycle driver who eventually starts robbing banks to support his son, and Bradley Cooper plays the cop that's trying to catch him, and it looks awesome. And if it's got that same grindhousey feel that Drive sort of has, or art house feel, I'm really interested in seeing this film. So that's definitely something I'm going to keep my eye out for this year. It looks awesome.
I love it. That grindhouse art house feel. that was kind of Drive, wasn't it? The Place Beyond the Pines, I think it looks pretty cool. Like I said to you, it's Drive with motorcycles, but it should be noted, that something that sets it apart is, it's not going to be like flashy and polished the way a lot of Drive was. Just listen to this plot summary from IMDb. I love this. A mysterious and mythical motorcycle racer, Luke, drives out of a carnival globe of death and whizzes through the back streets of Schenectady, New York, desperately trying to connect with a former lover, Romina, who recently and secretly gave birth to the stunt rider's son. In an attempt to provide for his new family, Luke quits the carnival life and commits a series of bank robberies, aided by his superior riding ability. And, it should also be mentioned that we're going to follow the cop on his tail, played by Bradley Cooper. I think this looks pretty cool. And, Ray Liotta and Bruce Greenwood are also involved, and I totally love those guys. I think it's going to be stylish and probably really cool. I don't think it's going to be as good as Drive, but I am looking forward to it. Robin, have you heard or seen anything about The Place Beyond the Pines?
I haven't actually watched that trailer for it yet, but I was reading over anticipated movies and I saw this one listed today, and it definitely sounds interesting. I was kind of skeptical at first because it's reuniting him with the director of Blue Valentine, and I wasn't really a fan of that movie, but I really had no idea till you told me that this is kind of a grindhouse, art house type of movie. And from what I'm reading, it is that Gosling's character in this is kind of like really unsympathetic and stuff, but that is kind of the point, I think. So it definitely looks interesting, and I also noticed it's apparently nearly 2.5 hours long, so I really have no idea what to expect from this film, but I'm intrigued.
The cinematography in it looks really terrific, at least from what they have in the trailer. It opens with a really great shot of Gosling flicking open and closed a butterfly knife, and he's just covered in tattoos and looks like a real badass, so I don't think he's going to be a sympathetic character, or maybe he is, but he's probably going to do some really horrible things, much like he did in Drive, to be fair. Robin, what's your number two?
My number two is The Wolf of Wall Street, directed by Martin Scorsese. And, of course, because it's Martin Scorsese, that would automatically put it at the top of one of my most anticipated films. It's his first film in, like, 3 years now, I think. And, of course, he's working with Leonardo DiCaprio again. And it takes place in Wall Street. It follows a lot of corruptions. And apparently it's based on a memoir from Jordan Belfort, who was involved with a lot of fraud and illegal activity on Wall Street. But the main reason I'm looking forward to it is the screenplay for this is written by Terrence Winter, who, of course, was a writer on The Sopranos and is the creator of Boardwalk Empire. So these are pretty much the two titans of mafia movies together at last. And I hear that there is a lot of mob stuff involved here, that there was a lot of mob infiltration that went on with this corruption on Wall Street. So I'm really anxious to see where they go with this, just because, like, this is almost like a dream pairing and stuff, because, like, Terrence Winter is kind of picked up where Martin Scorsese left off, because he hasn't really do that many mob movies anymore. So, and of course, in addition to DiCaprio, it also has like a terrific cast. Like, it has Jean Dujardin from The Artist, Jonah Hill, Matthew McConaughey, and some interesting casting as well. It's got roles for John Bernthal from The Walking Dead, Rob Reiner, Spike Jones and Joanna Lumley. So it's a very bizarre mixture of casting there. But I know that, like, the subject of kind of like Wall Street and that kind of corruption can be dry on its own. But I know that I can trust a director like Scorsese and all these actors to, like, make it interesting. So I'm really anxious to see where they go with this. And it's kind of funny. Apparently, about 10 years ago, they made a terrible direct-to-video movie called The Wolf of Wall Street that starring Eric Roberts that was literally about werewolves on Wall Street. So I hope this one doesn't get mixed up with it as well. And even though I don't think this will win Best Picture, I think it's going to be one of the big Oscar nominees because it's set to be released later in the year.
Holy crap. I had no idea this movie was being made.
Somehow, really? Hadn't heard of it?
Somehow
what?
This one,
really?
Somehow this one slipped right under my radar. And when you mentioned, I was like, The Wolf of Wall Street, what the heck? And I look it up, and you already mentioned some of the great casting here, but there's even more. Jon Favreau, Kyle Chandler, and Shea Whigham, who plays Eli on Boardwalk Empire. Oh, my God. And Spike Jones as well. I really like Spike Jones' acting, what little he's done. I also really like his directing as well. And so the fact that he's involved in this sort of Martin Scorsese, Terrence Winter sweeping collaboration with this all-star casts, wow, some very interesting casting here. Yeah, wow. Consider this like my honorary, I'll say my honorary number two. Because my number one, I'm still anticipating more. But wow,
I figured it
great.
Was going to be on TK's list just because of the whole Boardwalk Empire connection.
I totally didn't notice it. TK, is it on your list?
It's on my honorable mentions, but it's not on my actual list. But it has been one I've been looking out for because for most of the reasons Robin stated, because it sounds awesome.
Oh my God, yeah, no kidding. I'm really curious to see Jean Dujardin doing a Scorsese picture. And seeing him, I hadn't seen him in anything before The Artist, so I'm really interested to see him in this. So my number two, see, we can get slightly more respectable, although I have to preface this choice by saying that once upon a time I was a high school drama student, and I have also, in my teenage years, been a fan of cult films such as the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and as a result of all this, I really like the films of Baz Luhrmann. I'm not going to make some excuse and say that they're perfect, but, well, they're fun. They're really visually fun. They're full of energy. They clearly have, aspirations. Like they're definitely trying to do something cool and maybe show you something that you hadn't seen before. And I feel like even Baz Luhrmann's failures are worthwhile. Australia was a bit overlong, but I thought he was trying to do something really interesting with that one as well. All of that to say, my number two pick is his adaptation of The Great Gatsby, also starring Leonardo DiCaprio, who's really the man of the hour right now. And what I think is going to be so great, you know, people have seen the trailers already, and critics are already accusing it of being sort of glitter dunked and excessive, like opulence to the point of over the top opulence. And I think all of that's really going to work in the film's favor because, of course, The Great Gatsby, you know, it's the story is all about the Jay Gatsby and his opulent life. And I feel like Baz Luhrmann being able to do that level of opulence while at the same time bringing some really great cinematography. Luhrmann films, I find, always have really neat cinematography and memorable. So to bring that cinematography into this world of excess that Luhrmann does so well, and then on top of that, to apply these modern sensibilities. I hear Jay-Z is doing the score for this. That's going to be really weird, guys. I'm very curious to see what happens with that. But much like in Moulin Rouge, doing these modern songs, applying these modern sensibilities and this modern music to this period film provides this really neat juxtaposition comparing the past to the present, of course. And with The Great Gatsby, even in the trailers where they have like rap songs and the kinds of songs that might play at a modern dance club playing over scenes of Gatsby's party. It just draws the comparison between, you know, celebrity then and celebrity now, and how the nature of fame and the message that money can't buy you everything, it's still just as pertinent today. In essence, emphasizes the timelessness of a story like this one. And, I'm really looking forward to The Great Gatsby because of that. But I guess I'm kind of making excuses for Baz Luhrmann, but I totally recognize that, for a director, he does like to sort of bathe in excess on the screen. Are either of you guys really looking forward to The Great Gatsby?
I've never been a Baz Luhrmann fan at all, really. And I am one of those rare people who pretty much knows nothing about The Great Gatsby. I somehow managed to get through high school without ever having to read it at all. And I've never seen the original film version. So I'm really not all that familiar with the story of it at all. And like I said, I was just not a fan of really Moulin Rouge, Romeo and Juliet. So this really isn't high on the list of priorities for my movies to see in 2013, but if I get good notices, I might check it out. I'm anxious to see DiCaprio in a role like this.
Have you perchance seen Strictly Ballroom?
No, I haven't, actually.
Interesting. I think Strictly Ballroom is still one of Baz Luhrmann's best films. TK, are you looking forward to The Great Gatsby?
No, I remember I went through this up and down with Great Gatsby. When I first saw that they're making, like, oh, Caprio's in it? I mean, it's going to be totally awesome. And then I saw Tobey Maguire was in it. I'm like, I really don't know if I want to waste my time seeing this. And then the newest trailer that came out with that Baz Luhrmann feel to it, I'm like, I am so back into this movie. Again, Gatsby's on my honorable mentions list, but it hasn't made my top, so I'm super pumped to see this one, though, because Caprio's going to own Gatsby. I really think he's just going to do fantastic, so I'm really looking forward to see how the film goes. And I'm super excited to see how it does come Oscar time next year, because I really think they've got a good chance if it's an excellent film to go from there. I think it'll be badass.
The cinematography just looks absolutely fantastic to me. Those trailers, frankly, I think the movie is already worth it just because of the quality of what we see in those trailers. I really am looking forward to this. And it's also got, I really like Carey Mulligan. It's nice to have her in this film. And Joel Edgerton, you know, I can't say I was totally thrilled with him as an actor when I first saw him. But man, after seeing him in stuff like Zero Dark Thirty and last year's Warrior, was that last year? That was 2 years ago now, right?
Actually, 2011 was when it was released.
Yeah, 2 years ago now. I'm going to be doing that all month. Between Warrior, Zero Dark Thirty, and even the even though it wasn't a great movie, he was pretty good in that prequel to The Thing as well. And I'm also looking forward to seeing him in The Great Gatsby. And I really like Carey Mulligan. I think she's just cute as a button and also a really awesome actress. So that's my number two. So here it is, guys, down to the number one. TK, what's your most anticipated movie of 2013?
See, I have a sneaking suspicion that someone else, Gil, I'm actually pretty sure your number one and my number one are going to be the same. I think, but I'm not sure. This is going to be the final movie in an unofficial trilogy, and I can't wait to see it because the first two were just so friggin' awesome, and that's at World End.
That's my number one as well.
Yes!
The World's End? Yeah, that's mine as well, guys.
Yeah, unanimous.
That's the first time this has happened.
And come on now, this is no surprise, right? Are any of us surprised that we all picked the same thing?
No.
Not particularly. Actually, you know what? I'm a little surprised because usually one of us deviates. Like either Robin will have one film or I'll have something totally off the wall for my number one. I think it's funny that we've actually all picked the same one. It's kind of cool.
See, I am not surprised, and it's simply because we've been waiting for this one ever since Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz was what, a 2007 movie, I believe?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's 6 years that we've waited for the sort of ultimate reteaming of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and Edgar Wright to complete the Blood and Ice Cream Cornetto trilogy that they started back in 2004. God, all of 9 years ago with Shaun of the Dead. So, yeah, gosh, I can't wait to see this. It's got such a good cast. Of course, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are returning. And Martin Freeman is involved. Patty Considine is going to be there. It'll be interesting to see Rosamund Pike doing her thing alongside those guys. But, yeah, I mean, gosh, guys, you looking forward to it? Of course you are. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's kind of funny. I remember 2011, I think my number one anticipated movie was Paul, because even though it wasn't Edgar Wright, I was looking forward to seeing, like, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg team up again, together again to poke fun of, like, sci-fi cliches and stuff. But that kind of feels like a warm-up now to this one, because now it is the official completion of the trilogy, and they're together with Edgar Wright, and they're gonna poke fun of, like, apocalyptic end-of-the-world films, and that's what I'm looking forward to it. And I think it's probably a good thing that it took so much time, because these guys, even though they're making satirical comedies, put, like, so much thought into, like, their screenplays, because you break down Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, like, it structures their plots, and they're just so well structured, because you have like moments that are early on that you don't think are significant but then pay off at the end, and you can notice like so many new things on multiple viewings and notice like so many film references like that you didn't pick up on the first time. And I have a feeling they're going to do that again on World's End, and because it is the end of their trilogy, they're probably going to go all out. So I just have a feeling that they've been really crafting this to make it like the perfect ending of the trilogy, and I don't see how they cannot satisfy audiences. So, yeah, I've been anticipating this for so long.
These guys really do just work so well as a team. And, yeah, you know, Robin, I think you're right. It wasn't something that I picked this as my number one, just almost out of a knee-jerk reaction, because, of course, I got to pick it. Like, Shaun of the Dead is one of my favorite movies of all time. Hell, Hot Fuzz is probably among my favorite movies of all time as well. And I love Spaced. These guys are just such a great team when they work together, and I hadn't really considered it until you said it, but I think you're right. I think they know how much their fans love what they do, and so they're probably just going to give it absolutely their all. Details on the plot of this one have been sort of secretive. I know some of the basics, like it's a pub crawl at the end of the world, right? That's sort of the premise?
Yes, pretty much.
I heard many years ago, it was actually shortly after Hot Fuzz, I think it was Simon Pegg who was asked in an interview, what's next for you guys? Like, what's the next film you think is that you should round out on your genre trilogy? And Simon Pegg was saying, we were thinking of doing like a Mad Max-style post-apocalyptic movie. So some part of me is wondering if it's going to be something like these guys all go on a pub crawl, and the world ends, and then the second half of the movie is going to be them, like, fending for survival in a post-apocalyptic landscape.
I have a feeling it's going to be like that, that maybe they, like, meet, like, a rabid, like, motorcycle gang, like, from the Road Warrior and compete for gasoline or something. I'm totally seeing a plot line just like that.
I really hope so. But I know that whatever they're going to bring, it's going to be so much fun. This is the only film on my list that I haven't seen a trailer for yet. I really like to see a trailer before I totally like nail down the movies that I'm excited for. And but this one I knew I can go into this blind. All I've really seen, and it's not even from me being on a deliberate media blackout with this movie, but all I've really seen about this is a poster and a single still, and the still is just the cast in a bar. So,
I love that still, because everyone in that shot looks extremely shocked except Martin Freeman. So I'm super interested to see why that is.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I mean, it sounds so silly. Part of me is also really excited for just sort of what big famous actors are going to turn up unexpectedly. A great example, even though it was in the trailer, I really loved in the beginning of Hot Fuzz, where you have like a parade of these British actors just all doing cameos, Martin Freeman, Bill Nighy, Steve Coogan, etc. So I'm also excited just to see which prestige like British actors they've gotten involved this time around, too, because they have a history of doing that. Gosh, 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 The World's End. While we're on the topic, there's another film that I am looking forward to. That has a very similar title, and that is This Is the End, which is another sort of end-of-the-world movie with a fantastic cast. This one starring, let me pull it up because it's huge.
That's on my honorable mentions. I can't wait to see this movie.
Seth Rogen, Emma Watson, Paul Rudd, James Franco, Jonah Hill, Jason Segel, Jay Baruchel, Michael Cera, Martin Starr, Danny McBride. Jason Trost from the FP is going to be in it. I can't wait for that. And they're all just, they're all playing themselves. And gosh, it's directed by Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, the team behind Superbad. And, the trailer looks really hilarious and just, it's this weird kind of meta humor where they're all them at the end of the world. I'm definitely not anticipating as much as the other three films that I mentioned, but, as far as end of the world comedies go, I think we're going to get probably two of the best this year.
I'm just still wondering how Emma Watson got mixed in with that cast, because the rest is an ensemble that does all these films together, and then there's Emma Watson.
Yeah, very strange. Have you guys seen, presumably you've both seen the trailer for this, yeah?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh, my God.
No, I actually haven't.
Oh, really? Well, check it out, because it looks really funny. It looks very funny indeed. I'm curious about it. So those are our most anticipated films of the year, but I'm sure we all have long lists of honorable mentions, other films we're looking forward to. You guys want to start us off?
Well, one that I was debating whether to put this on my list, because I'm not anticipating it just because I think it'll be good. I'm just anticipating it out of more curiosity, and that's Spike Lee's remake of Old Boy. Like, this one has been in, like, development for, like, so many years, and now it's finally going to be released. I mean, we have talked about Old Boy so much on these podcasts, and just the idea of Hollywood trying to do, like, a remake of this is just almost unfathomable just because of how dark the material is. But I am really anxious to see it because of the casting, because they have Josh Brolin, Elizabeth Olsen, Charlton Copley, and Samuel L. Jackson. And the idea that Charlton Copley might be playing the villain has got me, like, really, really intrigued. Like, even though I'm not sure this one is going to turn out fine, I'm just anxious to see what they're going to do with it, like, trying to Hollywoodize it, because there's just so much material in the film that I just cannot see them doing. So, yeah, this is definitely anticipated, but maybe for the wrong reasons. Who knows?
I don't know. I was recently soured against Spike Lee because of the way he decried Django Unchained and then freely admitted that he refused to see the movie.
Yes.
Any filmmaker who will not only criticize but, like, publicly decry a film without having watched it, they clearly don't have this certain level of respect for film. Like, you don't criticize, don't judge a book by its cover. It's so problematic. So I was recently soured on that. I'm curious to see if he'll do anything with it. It's going to be interesting to see Old Boy as a North American film, given how extreme it is and its violence and gore. But I don't know. I guess I'm kind of looking forward to it. Spike Lee.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I'll check it out just out of curiosity's sake. Other ones that I'm anticipating, I'm actually really looking forward to Lovelace, the biopic about Linda Lovelace, because I'm anxious to see Amanda Seyfried in the role. And of course, I'm kind of an aficionado for, like, old 70s porn, like the history of it. Like, I wrote a review of Inside Deep Throat, so I'm really anxious to see, like, how they interpret the events there. And it's got a really interesting cast as well. It's got, like, James Franco in it and Eric Roberts as well. That's got me really intrigued. So
Amanda Seyfried looks off. Actually, Amanda Seyfried looks perfect. I've seen the video stills of her, and she looks awesome. I can't wait to see this film, actually.
Yes, definitely. And also, Robert Patrick, Hank Azaria, and Peter Sarsgaard. So, yeah, definitely an interesting cast. Looking forward to that one. Other anticipated movies, I'm sure we're going to want to discuss this, but The Man of Steel, like, I kind of was skeptical about, like, Zack Snyder, like, directing, like, a Superman movie, and the fact that they're trying to reboot it again, like, 7 years later. But I really like the trailer for it. It just looks like unlike any other Superman movie I've ever seen before. So I'm anxious to see what they're going to do with the material. Gil, I know you're a bigger Zack Snyder fan than most people. So are you looking forward to it?
Well, you know, not particularly. Superman has just never been my favorite hero or anywhere close to my favorite superhero. I love Christopher Nolan's work, sure, and I am a big Zack Snyder apologist. I love a lot of his films. I think they're just absolutely great fun. But the subject matter of Superman, it's just never, it's never really thrilled me, I'm afraid. That being said, my friend Steve actually put it really well. He said, this is a Superman movie that I'm at least somewhat interested in, and I can't really say that about any others. That's certainly the case with me, is, you know, I've certainly watched Superman movies and enjoyed them well enough, but this is probably the first time that I've been sort of, I'm sort of curious to see what goes on. The camera work looks fantastic. But like I said, you know, I just have a hard time finding the subject matter compelling. The most compelling Superman has ever been to me is the speech delivered by David Carradine at the end of Kill Bill Volume 2. Like, nice. That was the most interesting thing I've ever heard about Superman. So that's sort of where I stand on the Man of Steel.
Can I cut in here for a second? Sorry, what part of Michael Shannon as Zod do you guys not get?
See,
I forgot about that.
I can't wait to see this movie. Particularly because of that, I will go see it, and I honestly think even if the movie itself blows, Shannon is going to be so awesome, it's going to be worth my ticket price.
See, now, I am definitely looking forward to Michael Shannon. However, I heard some rumors that this character might not be Zod after all, might be some other villain. I don't know, guys. I certainly hope that's not the case. But yes, he's one of the main reasons that I'll definitely see it. I'm kind of middle of the road on Kevin Costner and Russell Crowe right now, especially because I hear Russell Crowe was really bad in Les Miserables. But I don't know. Where'd you say you stand on this one, Robin?
I might put it in the old boy category where, like, I wasn't overly excited about it, but the trailer made me a lot more intrigued. So, it's definitely one of my most anticipated out of sheer curiosity. I'll give it that.
Any other honorable mentions?
Kind of a guilty pleasure that I am strangely looking forward to is that new Michael Bay movie called Pain and Gain with The Rock and Mark Wahlberg, just because it looks like a very different, like, Michael Bay movie than usual. It's kind of a break from the Transformers, and I generally do like Michael Bay's movies overall when he's not doing Transformers, so this one looks kind of goofy and looks pretty fun, so I'm actually looking forward to it more than I thought I would be. Also looking forward to Kick-Ass 2. Also the sequel to Anchorman finally coming out in late December, and this is another guilty pleasure where I really shouldn't be looking forward to it, but seeing Roland Emmerich do White House Down, where Channing Tatum plays a secret service agent who wants to save the White House from a terrorist attack, and the president is played by Jamie Foxx. I just think it's going to be hilarious after seeing him play Django, playing the president of the United States, and since I kind of like Channing Tatum now after 21 Jump Street, I'm probably going to enjoy this. I kind of feel that way about all Roland Emmerich's movies, where I know that they're not going to be good, but I strangely am looking forward to them, so I guess I'll put that on the list as well. And also Elysium, the new Neil Blomkamp film with Matt Damon, and it's kind of funny because I think they kind of kept a lot of the details about this one in secrecy, so it's another sci-fi epic. There are going to be a lot of them this year, so there's not a lot that people know about it, but I've really been waiting so many years for him to do a follow-up to District 9, so I'm really looking forward to see what he does with this one.
Have you seen the stills of Matt Damon and Charlton Copley from that film?
I've seen the stills with Matt Damon, but I don't think I've seen the Charlton Copley ones.
He looks really badass. I am also highly anticipating Elysium. And a bunch of those, too. Anchorman 2, Kick-Ass 2. Looking forward to all those.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Rob.
Okay, one more that I'm actually looking forward to as a baseball buff is the movie 42, the story of Jackie Robinson, because they've never really done a good movie about that subject. And the main reason I'm looking forward to it is the casting of Harrison Ford as Branch Rickey, the general manager who brought him in. I'm really anxious to see that. So it's not a high on my list, but I'm looking forward to it.
I'm actually really looking forward to this movie because this is going to sound hysterical, but the podcast I listen to, The Smartest Man in the World, is hosted by Greg Proops. He's a huge baseball fanatic, and literally everything I know about baseball I have learned from Greg Proops. And he talks a lot about Robinson, and it's actually made me really interested to see this film. So kudos to you, Proops. All my baseball knowledge comes from you.
Yay!
TK, do you have any that we haven't mentioned?
Yeah, actually, and there's a couple of glaring ones that I'm going to wag my finger at for you guys. Since A Dame to Kill For.
Damn straight. Oh, that was on my list.
I'm glad you mentioned Anchorman, Robin, because the teaser trailers they put up when they first announced the film were the goddamn funniest things I'd seen, like, for months. I still think they're funny. I go back and rewatch them every now and then just to hear Champ say, "It's got machine guns and boobies. Whammy." I can't wait to see that movie. And also, I'm kind of interested to see 300 Rise of the Empire, because I really like the first one, and I'll be perfectly happy with seeing more of that.
But see, it's not Zack Snyder, and that particular brand of sort of slow-motion graphic novel adaptation that Zack Snyder does is such his trademark that to have somebody else attempt it, I don't know. I don't have a lot of hopes for this one. This is definitely one where I'll need to see the trailer to see how somebody else sort of apes that style, or if they go some totally different way with it.
I think it's going to be interesting either way. Also, Star Trek Into Darkness, the first reboot was so awesome. I can't wait to see the sequel. And Benedict Cumberbatch as a villain is something I'm always for. And lastly, Red 2. Because the first one with Bruce Willis and Freeman and Helen Mirren was so awesome. And the other cast members they're pulling out for the second one look amazing. And, of course, I've forgotten all of them off the top of my head. So it's totally badass. I can't wait to see that one.
The even more elderly Expendables. Though I guess Bruce Willis was in that as well. Other ones I'm looking forward to, the next Hobbit movie, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Monsters University. While I didn't really like Brave, I don't know if Pixar is on the downswing just yet. Monsters University looks clever and fun and cute, so I hope it'll be good. I mentioned before Thor the Dark World, Iron Man 3, Marvel Phase 2, essentially. Warm Bodies, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing this one. I had my doubts about a zombie romantic comedy where it's like a zombie falls in love with a girl. But the trailers have certainly turned me around, and it's got Rob Corddry, who likes our site, apparently.
Yay!
Or at least when we post embarrassing footage of him. I don't know, I think this one could be a bit of fun. More sci-fi. I'm kind of looking forward to that sci-fi Oblivion with Tom Cruise. It's directed by Joseph Kaczynski. Tom Cruise and Morgan Freeman, I should say. I liked Tron Legacy well enough, certainly on a visual level, and I'm interested to see what Kaczynski does with Oblivion. I read an interview with him recently where he said he wants to bring sci-fi out of the darkness and into the daylight, and from the trailers, that's what it looks like. It looks like it'll be really neat having this science fiction world that's like very green and has a lot of nature in it, and it's out in the sunlight. It's not hidden in the shadows or in these like dark futuristic looks, which, I mean, you can totally see why he's rebelling against that after doing Tron Legacy, which is like all darkness. It's just like all glow in the dark tones. What else have I got here? I'm anticipating this one, cause it's, I mean, it was fun, but I don't expect it to be a great movie. But Insidious Chapter 2, I'd like to see where they go with this one. Insidious really surprised me with how sort of original and fun and, yes, quite scary it actually is. So they're reuniting the entire cast and crew, basically, for Insidious Chapter 2. Looking forward to some more sort of haunted house jump scares with that one. And finally, a couple of them. One, undoubtedly a prestige picture, the new Danny Boyle film, Trance, starring James McAvoy, Rosario Dawson, and Vince Gassel. I just saw the trailer for this one like an hour before we began recording this. And TK, I sent it to you as well. Robin, have you had a chance to see the trailer for Trance?
Oh, no, I haven't.
TK, what'd you think of it?
It looks awesome. It looks awesome. And a little silly, but mostly incredibly awesome.
A little silly, but you know what? It's Danny Boyle, and this guy really does consistently deliver the goods. So he's another director where I'll just go into one of his movies blind. I don't need to see anything. If it's Danny Boyle film, I know I'm at least going to be entertained, if not, you know, just knocked out of my chair. I should also mention, there are a lot of good comedies coming out next year. The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. Have you guys seen the trailer for this one?
Oh, my God. I want to see this movie so bad because it looks so dumb, but also hilarious.
Have you seen the trailer for it, Robin?
Oh, no, unfortunately.
Okay, this is like, okay, take the plot of The Prestige, set it in modern times, and give it that Judd Apatow feel. It stars Steve Carell and Steve Buscemi as a pair of Las Vegas magicians who are suddenly upstaged by Jim Carrey playing a parody of Chris Angel, who does all this, like, extreme magic. And
he's held his pee for 6 days.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. And so this causes a split up between Steve Carell and Steve Buscemi's characters. And Steve Carell has to turn to his magician idol played by Alan Arkin. I think this is going to be absolutely hilarious. I mean, I'm a sucker for magic movies because I practice magic as a hobby. And The Prestige is, again, probably one of my favorite films of all time. So to see, like, the goofy slapstick comedy version of this with that cast is going to be great. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And then the one that is totally going to be, like, a guilty pleasure for me, I know it, is The Lone Ranger. I bet The Lone Ranger is going to be pretty fun. It's sure, it's just Pirates of the Wild West, you know, it's just Gore Verbinski and Johnny Depp doing their particular brand of goofy, over-the-top, slapstick comedy and action combined. And, yeah, it's pretty racially problematic with Johnny Depp playing Tonto. But I bet it's also going to be a hell of a lot of fun. It's also, it's got a great cast, too. I bet Tom Wilkinson and Helena Bonham Carter are really going to chew the scenery in this. So here's hoping that one's pretty good, too. Of course.
One thing I forgot to mention is a sequel to The Raid Redemption is coming out this year called The Raid Retaliation, which apparently takes place 2 hours after the events from the original film. So for that reason alone, I'm looking forward to it. Just the fact that they went through all that and this movie's going to pick up right where they left off.
Yeah, I can't wait. More of that action. Gimme. It's such a fun time. All right, guys. So we've talked about what we think will be some of the best films of the year. Now let's talk about some of the worst, at least our predictions for some of the worst movies of the year. You guys can probably guess. I actually have two movies listed here. You guys can probably just guess one. Guess. What do I think is going to be one of the worst movies of the year?
The Hunger Games sequel?
Oh, no. Wow, overshot. Definitely not. There's going to be worse than that. TK, can you guess?
I'm really sorry. No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Well, it's funny. I actually recorded a sort of mini podcast conversation with Tom Lando recently, and Tom was saying, when I read the back row and there's a trailer for a movie, I generally don't watch the trailer because I don't like to do that. I find watching a trailer could really spoil a film for you. So instead of watching it, I'll just read he's talking about me. I'll just read Gil's comments on the movie. And I find it amusing that every entry on Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters begins with something like, yes. Oh my God, this movie looks like a piece of shit.
How did I not guess that one?
Oh my God, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters looks like a piece of shit. It looks so bad. Jeremy Renner, what are you thinking? I mean, I've expected bad from Gemma Arterton. Look at her track record. She was in the Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time, right? That was her?
Yes.
Yeah, and then she was in Wrath of the Titans last year. That quality movie. Or was it Wrath of the Titans that she was in, or Clash of the Titans, or both? She was definitely in one of those stupid Titans movies. And now she's in Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Fine. I expected that crap from her. But Jeremy Renner, dude, your star is on the rise. This is a big mistake. You're going to regret this. I can tell. And, you know, Famke Janssen, she's been in some bad ones and some good ones, so I guess this isn't totally unexpected from her, But I was really surprised that Jeremy Renner was doing this, because it seems like he'd be really careful to only do these prestige pictures. Maybe it was Tommy Wirkola, the director of Dead Snow, attracting Jeremy Renner to the project. But even Dead Snow, while fun, I did not think it was an amazing movie. I don't know, do you guys have thoughts on this little turd?
I'm just anxious to see if this becomes like a Brothers Grimm situation where Caitlin winds up actually liking it while you end up hating it.
Oh my god. I mean, here's the thing, is that I can make concessions for that kind of movie. I really like Van Helsing. Van Helsing is totally this kind of stupid movie. But I just don't think from the trailers, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters really looks a lot like Jonah Hex to me. I think it's going to be pretty bad. TK's quiet, though. TK, you like the Brothers Grimm. You looking forward to Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters?
I can't say I am, gentlemen, so no. Not at all.
I'll also just mention another movie that I think is actually going to be one of the worst of the year, but I seem to be the only person who thinks this. It's another magic movie, actually. Now You See Me, starring Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson and who else? There are a few other celebrity names in there. Mark Ruffalo, that's right. Mark Ruffalo is the cop that's on to them. Michael Caine is in this as well. And Morgan Freeman. Isla Fisher as well. I don't think this looks too good. Bank robbing illusionists. It looks really flashy and dumb. And, I mean, maybe it is because I practice magic as a hobby, but it feels like the kind of magician movie written about someone who has just no idea what magic is all about. I can tell it's going to really bother me. It's directed by Louis Leterrier, who did The Incredible Hulk, and he also did Clash of the Titans, I believe. So, yeah, I also think that's going to be another serious stinker.
Kind of funny, when I first saw the premise and the cast, I wondered if this one was actually going to make it to your most anticipated films of the year, because on paper it seems like with that cast it might be great, but I can see why that maybe it's going to be a film that will be insulting for people who are buffs of actual magic.
It also just looks really flashy and stupid.
Yeah.
Like the premise of a troupe of bank robbing magicians, that could be cool. Like, they could do that very interestingly. This is not the case in Now You See Me. And I think it's going to be one that I'm really going to hate by the end of the year. TK, what's your prediction for the worst film of the year?
To be perfectly, I know you guys were talking about this film earlier, and I just decided to keep my mouth shut until now. I really think that the Old Boy remake is going to suck. I really do, because compared to the original, I'm finding it very difficult to wrap my head around the fact that someone can try and create something that's as good and slave for a North American audience. The first film was too good, and I'm worried that people are playing with it. Even with the cast that was talked about, it strikes me as just a poor idea for a remake.
See, that's really interesting. I probably would never have thought to put the Old Boy remake on my worst of list, because I know we've talked a lot before about our own personal criteria for, you know, what makes a good movie, what makes a bad movie, and I know that this Old Boy remake is going to be at least competently made on a technical level. So it's not gonna make my worst of list, just because I'm sure the movie is going to be a very competently made movie, even if it vastly pales in comparison to the original film, which again is just so intense and wacky. I'm also more curious about the Old Boy remake than I am sort of sneering at it. Do you have any other thoughts on that one, Robin?
No, like, it, for all we know, it could turn out to be one of the worst films of the year, but it's definitely one of the most morbidly curious releases of the year, I'll just say that.
I guess my picks are a bit more predictable as far as...
Yeah.
I'm going for the low-hanging fruit with something like Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Robin, what's your prediction for the worst film?
Well, I don't know if this will count as the worst film of the year, because there will probably be a lot of people who like it, but I can't think of any film that I am least anticipating or least want to see this year than To the Wonder by my old friend Terrence Malick. It's kind of funny, because Terrence Malick usually goes like several years between films, and but here, only about 2 years after The Tree of Life, he suddenly made another one, and it's funny, I read an early review from it from the Venice Film Festival where people said that it was his most abstract film yet. set, and I'm like, oh my god, he's made a film that's more abstract than The Tree of Life or any of his other ones. So, and I heard this one met with a mixture of applause and boos. It sounds really, really like a lot of his artsy stuff that I just can't stand. And even though it has a good cast, like Ben Affleck, Rachel McAdams, and Javier Bardem, I hear they're not used very well. And it's quite funny. Apparently, there were tons of big-name actors who were originally in the film that got cut. Jessica Chastain, Rachel Weisz, Amanda Peet, Barry Pepper, and Michael Sheen. They all had roles in this and then were all cut out. So I'm like, what the hell is this? So, yeah, I'm sure since Terrence Malick has his fans, some people might love this film, but just the thought of watching it makes me cringe right now.
Yeah, Terrence Malick is quite the artiste. I'll probably see that movie, but he's not the kind of filmmaker where I'm like really eagerly anticipating his next movie. I respect his craft. He's certainly got a great eye for cinema, but his movies certainly aren't always for me, and they can become a bit overlong and self-indulgent. They're always pretty. Now, before we talk very briefly about our Oscar prediction for the Best Picture winner, I just wanted to... I hadn't listed this initially in our show notes, but there were a couple of remakes that I was... I don't know how to feel about them, guys, and I wanted to ask you about them. And they're both remakes of classic horror movies. I'm talking, of course, about the remake of Carrie, starring Chloe Grace Moretz, and the remake of The Evil Dead, which is being produced by Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. What do you guys think of these ones? Robin, you in particular, you're a big horror fan. What do you think of these particular remakes?
Well, of course, I've always been against, like, the concept of an Evil Dead remake for years. Like, for so many years, I wanted them to make just a new one with, like, because, like, I'm sure Bruce Campbell could still do it, so I always wondered why they never made, like, another sequel. But, I mean, the original trailer left me underwhelmed, but the recent newer trailers have left me more intrigued, so I guess I will give it a chance, but I kept thinking that this is the one horror film that they just wouldn't bother to remake, and I'm kind of disappointed that they finally went through it. And I don't know. I'm really looking forward to seeing Chloe Moretz, see what she can do with the role, but it's like, what else can they really do? I actually saw a made-for-TV movie remake that they did 10 years ago, so it's like, why are they doing another one? So, yeah, what else can I say? It's like, I just want to see more new stuff like Cabin in the Woods and stuff. I don't want to see all these classics just keep getting remade.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those things where... part of me is just really disappointed that Hollywood has stooped to this level to remake these seriously. Like, Evil Dead is perfect. Don't mess with Evil Dead. It's such a cult hit. You'll just end up alienating fans like us. But at the same time, some cynical part of me is thinking like, ah, well, it was only a matter of time before they got around to remaking these ones. TK, do you have an opinion on these?
Not particularly, I'll be perfectly honest. Like, I'm a horror movie fan, but I'm not a huge, like, I'm not nearly as big as you guys are. So the remakes of these films interest me, but they don't fill me with bile, as it appears you guys do.
I would have outright dismissed the Evil Dead remake. And in fact, if you read my commentary on the trailers on the back row, you'll see that my early commentary was all just like total vitriol. Oh my god, why are they remaking this? It's so unnecessary. Just what a dumb idea. And the Red Band trailer, where you actually get to see some of the gore, some of the stuff that made Evil Dead really unique, that looks a bit more promising. It definitely looks a bit more promising. The fact that they aren't using any CGI, also very promising. And, you know, the fact that Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi are behind it, I mean, that is sort of like a seal of approval. That doesn't necessarily mean that they've got the best judgment in this case. But the fact that they're at least on board, you know, maybe if we're lucky, Bruce Campbell will have a cameo at least. And that might be fun. But yeah, I don't know. Hard to say. I'll inevitably see both of those movies, but whether I see them in theaters or not, that's up for debate. So now let's real briefly, like I said at the top of the show, we're recording this on January 10th. The nominees for the Oscars have just been announced. And so I thought it might be fun for each of us to predict the Best Picture winner. I don't think any of us have well, clearly, since you guys still haven't seen Zero Dark Thirty, none of us have seen all of the Best Picture nominees. I still need to see Life of Pi. I still need to see Lincoln and Silver Linings Playbook and Amour as well. I need to see Les Miserables. So I still have a bunch of these that I need to see. But I thought it might be fun to do sort of one of those like hold up the envelope predictions. And this is mostly inspired by the fact that very early on in the history of our podcast, we were all saying that The King's Speech was going to win Best Picture long before The King's Speech won Best Picture. So let's make a recorded prediction again now, guys. And if we're all right, then we get to wave it in everybody's faces. TK, what do you think is going to win Best Picture?
Argo.
Argo?
Yeah. Hang on. Let me point this out. The only film I've seen that's been nominated for a Best Picture is Django.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't seen anything yet.
So on what have you based your opinion that Argo is going to win it?
I've seen the trailers for all these films, and I think Argo is really, really, really going to... I want it to win so bad because I really think Affleck is doing such a good job directing. And from what Robin said of the film, it sounds awesome. So that's... And I don't know. There's a couple of these that I feel are pure Oscar bait, like Amour and Lincoln are built specifically to not specifically, but I think they're made to win Oscars. So it's kind of nice to see something else get it. And I really, really, really hope and think that Argo's going to.
Robin, was Argo your pick?
Actually, I thought what we were doing is picking the movies released on 2013 and picking who we think will win the Best Picture Oscar next year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well,
no. But hell, because we are dedicating a full Oscar podcast closer to the time, it doesn't matter. What movie from this year do you think is going to win the 2013-2014 Oscars?
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to pick Argo for this year's Oscars, but I was looking through the list of movies that are going to be released this year, and I think next year that one of the best candidates is going to be the movie Monuments Men. I was going to put this on my most anticipated, but I was saving it for this. This is basically it's going to be released in December, and it's about a crew of art historians who decide to reunite and stop the Nazis from, destroying a bunch of priceless paintings during World War II, and it's directed by George Clooney and has one of the best casts I've ever seen assembled for a movie. It's got Clooney himself, Matt Damon, Daniel Craig, Kate Blanchett, Bill Murray, John Goodman, and Jean Dujardin. This is so obviously Oscar bait for next year that I'm going to go out on a limb and predict it's going to win in 2014.
Wow, yeah, no kidding. That's another movie that had flown under my radar. I hadn't heard about it, but man, just from what you've said, that's total Oscar bait, especially with Clooney in the director's chair. I'm trying to think if there are any off the top of my head that I could predict for a 2013 Oscar, but I don't think I really know. Maybe that one Gravity by Alfonso Cuarón, which stars George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. Astronauts attempt to return to Earth after debris crashes into their space shuttle, leaving them drifting alone in space. That seems like it might be a real tour de force. Also, if I had to predict the 2014 Oscar winner for Best Foreign Film, I'd choose Wong Kar-wai's The Grand Master, which is another story of the martial arts master Ip Man who trained Bruce Lee, but this is going to be total art house kung fu. So I definitely bet that one's going to at least get some mention, get some play at the Oscars in 2014. My pick for this year's Best Picture winner is Zero Dark Thirty. This, after seeing it, it's a really solid movie. I think it's going to be total Oscar bait. And I think that maybe Beasts of the Southern Wild will come up behind it and steal the Oscar from it. I think that there may be a chance for that. But I don't know, It's so funny with the Academy, as we say every year around Oscar time, we talk about how so much of it is politics. It really doesn't have a lot to do with quality of film. And because of politics, I feel like the Academy, it's almost like they're obligated to keep honoring Kathryn Bigelow because she's a woman director. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I really want there to be more prominent prestige female directors, but that's the kind... it's that thinking that I think is going to come into play with Academy politics. And sadly, I almost feel like they're gonna award it to Zero Dark Thirty, not just because it's a great movie, but also, well, you know, they're afraid of being sexist. I don't know, though. I have heard a lot of good things about the Silver Linings Playbook. But we will get to all of that a lot closer to Oscar time.
I will mention that Kathryn Bigelow is not nominated for Best Director, so that's the kind of the thing that makes me skeptical that Zero Dark Thirty is going to win.
Oh, Academy. So predictable.
Yeah.
So, any other thoughts on stuff coming out in 2013 that we're looking forward to? We certainly covered all the movies.
Oh, one that I forgot to mention is the movie Malavita, which is Luc Besson's return to directing after many years. He's mostly been writing and producing these past few years, and it's a mob movie with Robert De Niro and Tommy Lee Jones, so that's definitely got me intrigued right there.
Yeah, I'll definitely see that one. And I think that's about it. So, hey, guess what? It's time for the dumb joke of the week. I didn't want to believe that my dad was stealing from his job as a road worker, but when I went over to his house, all the signs were there.
Oh, God.
If you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to do so. Tell us your most anticipated movies of 2013. You can contact us by email. Email tk@the-back-row.com and be sure to peek behind the velvet rope for the steamy side of the back row. Robin can be reached by emailing robin.warder@the-back-row.com. And be sure to check out Robin's regular features, Robin's Underrated Gems, and Before They Were Stars. You can reach me by emailing gil@the-back-row.com. Thanks so much for listening, and have a happy 2013 at the movies. Music for today's podcast comes to us courtesy of Vince Nitro. Feel free to email Vince at vincenitro@the-back-row.com.